90.7 KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's 7:59, Thursday, January 5th. A cold day, but sunny. A high near 31 this afternoon. Coming up in just about 2 minutes, Voices from the Edge with Joanne Hardesty. Joanne takes a look at a proposal to combine the Portland Police Bureau with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. That's coming up next. At 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch, your weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program, hosted by Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogering welcomes back Dr. Zahair Wahab to discuss his work in his home country of Afghanistan. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11 o'clock, on Between the Covers, we present Solmaz Sharif's astonishing first book, Look. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk brings you Pulitzer Prize-winning author Isabel Wilkerson, fresh off an appearance on Meet the Press, to talk about her book, The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. Great programming today on KBOO, and thank you for your generous support by being a member of KBOO. And if you're not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. It's 8 o'clock. Voices from the Edge next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on his birthday, Sunday, January 8th. Come ride your bike around Portland with Diablo as we celebrate the life and music of David Bowie with a mobile dance party and sing-along. Again, that's the first annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on January 8th at 3 p.m. at the Bowie Bike Lane at the corner of Southwest Broadway and Main in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
In Oregon, a person with mental illness can be charged with a nonviolent crime and end up in a jail cell for months in a deteriorating mental state and without restorative treatment. Tune into Prison Pipeline on January 9th to hear Disability Rights Oregon's proposed legislation that will help people with mental illness who become entangled with the criminal justice system. That's Prison Pipeline, January 9th at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Dookie Jam, taking place monthly on the first Thursdays at Dante's in Portland. Dookie Jam is an open funk jam session for musicians, vocalists, MCs, and everyone who is over 21. Again, that's Dookie Jam this month on Thursday, January 5th at Dante's, 350 West Burnside Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty, and I am looking forward to today's conversation. Feel free to give me a call to join the conversation at 503-231-8187. So last week, I was a bit taken aback when I read that there was a proposal being floated around Multnomah County by now Multnomah County Sheriff Mike Reese to consolidate policing operations between Multnomah County Sheriff and Portland Police Bureau. Now, it caught my attention because the only police department in the state with a worse reputation than Portland Police is the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. And the fact that the last four sheriffs have retired under clouds and have been forced out really made me go and do some deep looking at what the heck are they talking about? Because you would think a new sheriff who's coming into a department that has been riddled with overtime abuses and scandal from the chiefs, from the sheriff's, the top sheriff from the sheriff's office, that the first order of business would be kind of doing some assessment about what's wrong in Multnomah County Sheriff's operation and what do we need to do to fix it. But no, Reese has decided that he needs to build an empire, and the empire should include his former organization, Portland Police Bureau. Now, you may remember that Reese didn't actually leave the Portland Police Bureau under the best of circumstances. In fact, he had been caught misrepresenting to the city council several times, issues, votes. And in fact, he would have we would have body cameras purchased had myself and others not read to the city council what it was they were voting on. So what's the proposal? The proposal that, as per the Tribune last Thursday, is that there are these talks going around about consolidating the two law enforcement organizations. Why is this such a bad idea? Well, I'm going to remind you that there was a study that came out last year in 2015 that looked at use of force in the Multnomah County jails. And you may also remember that under the former sheriff, Dan Stanton, the person who produced the report was fired after the report came out stating that African Americans were suffered to greater uses of force within Multnomah County jails than other populations. And so Reese gets appointed because it's such an inside insidious kind of relationship. He ends up appointed sheriff. He then is the only person on the ballot because who knows anything about sheriff races. And then he gets elected sheriff. But he'll be running again in 2 years because he is running now. He is serving out the term of Stanton, who resigned after his retirement increased. And so, so Reese comes in and decides to hire a firm to actually review the report. Now, listen to this. So Multnomah County paid an independent consultant to review Multnomah County jail operations. The consultant came back with information that the sheriff didn't like. So the sheriff fired the consultant that did the report. That was Sheriff Dan Stanton. And then Mike Reese, when he takes office, he decides he's going to get someone else to come in and review the report that was done that talked about the disparities in use of force within the jail, the county jail. And so, ironically, he does. He actually hires, he goes to the National Institute of Corrections, who sends a gentleman here by the name of Tim Ryan for a 3-day interviews and review of papers. The interesting thing about Tim Ryan is that his entire career in the jails was marked with accusations of racial bias and discriminatory treatment, specifically around African Americans. Exhibit one would be that when he took over at the Miami-Dade jail system in January of 2014, one of the first things he did was develop a law that prohibited, let's see, I want to read this right, because I know that over at the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, they're taking notes just to make sure that I'm not giving you bad information. So here it is. The New York Times stated that Ryan took over this massive, long-troubled Miami-Dade jail system in late 2006. Among his first moves was to issue a policy that prohibited braids, cornrows, dreadlocks, plaits, extensions, ponytails, or anything that looked like that. In a 2008 Internal Affairs investigation, they looked into whether or not he made fun of Kunta Kinte, the lead character in Roots, the TV saga. Between 2008 and 2013, the system was under constant scrutiny from the U.S. Department of Justice, which reported inhumane and shocking living conditions, including excessive force and inadequate medical care. Ryan retired in January of 2014, but told local reporters he did so by choice. Now, I share his background because someone with that background, you would not be surprised, didn't find any discrimination happening in Multnomah County Jail. So for him, he went in and read some reports. He talked to the people that worked in the jail, and they all agreed, you know, nothing looks like there's any disparate treatment. And so, but because, of course, they need to get more federal money, and they need to figure out how to write for more federal money, what they did do with Timothy Ryan was to develop a whole long list of data that they need to collect before they can determine whether or not racial disparate treatment is happening in the county jail. What I find offensive about the data that they want to collect is they don't want to tie the data to any individual officers, any individual shifts, any individual departments. They just want like an overview of use of force. And they don't want to have it tied to individual officers. But they want to make sure that the report includes the criminal history of the person that they use of force for, what level prisoner they are, what their incarceration history is, and which to me sounds like what they're trying to do is make the case for use of force. Well, this is a bad dude, so of course we had to use force on them. That's how, and so they'll be going back to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners, requesting that they give them money so they could create this data tracking system so that they can find out whether or not disparity happens in the county jail. But even with the incompetence of the consultant, well, maybe actually he was hired just because of his expertise. His expertise is actually ensuring that racially discriminated practices are hidden and justified. So maybe he was hired just for that reason. But be that as it may be, the fact that one of the things that they did uncover, and you have to read really deeply in these reports, which I love because they don't actually think that the rest of us know how to read. So you have to dig deeply in these reports to actually figure out what the real problems are in the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. What I found interesting is the lack of training of supervisors in the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. And so if the people who are responsible for making sure that people actually carry out the appropriate duties aren't well trained, how could you expect the other officers to actually have any accountability whatsoever? And what's interesting to me is like one of the recommendations that they made that I actually thought was a really good one, they say that in most jails, when somebody's being arrested, the first person they encounter in entering the jail is the medical staff. And most jails do that for several reasons. Normally, when people are meeting with medical staff, it kind of calms down the situation. Somebody's coming into a jail system. I've never been in jail, but I suspect it's a pretty intimidating thing to be walking into a jail, being fingerprinted, going through that process. Some people respond better than others to that. And so I think and so what they said is that national best practices has become the first people that somebody entering jail encounter are the medical people to do the medical screening to determine whether or not there are medical issues that need to be addressed. That is not how it happens in Multnomah County jails. The first people they encounter are the people that are in the intake area. And 45% of use of force complaints from Multnomah County sheriffs happens in the intake area. And so that if should send off a red light to anybody with a brain cell that that's the area that we really need to focus more cameras, because apparently there aren't that many cameras in the intake area. I remember the camera footage from James Chassie when they were taking him into the Multnomah County Jail. And so there appeared to be a lot of video cameras in there then. So my question is, did they take out some of those cameras because they really didn't want it to be on videotape? I think that there needs to be not a jail person reviewing what's happening in Multnomah County jails, not somebody with the reputation of this Ryan character, because it, you know, they will just protect each other. One of the other things, so I found that really interesting. Why don't we do this? That wouldn't cost a lot of money to just change how you actually take people into the jail system. I found it very interesting that on the questions that Mike Reese had about this particular situation. Oh, wait, there's one I want to get to first. One is the recommendation from this certified smart guy who was really ineffective at running a constitutionally just jail in Miami-Dade in Florida. His recommendation is anytime the press calls and asks about anything going on in the jails, you need to start with this preamble. And the preamble talks about, you know, Multnomah County processes 38,000 arrestees every year, over 100 a day, 4 to 5 an hour, from February 12th to December 2015. Multnomah County sheriffs process 138,000 people. And so what they want, and then it has all the demographic breakdown by census. So what they want to do is paint a picture before they actually answer the media question. And I'm troubled by the fact of this recommendation is that if the media calls and says, we understand that there was a use of force event in Multnomah County Jail, to respond with, well, you know, by the way, we do process 38,000 arrestees every year in the jail, that doesn't answer the question about the abuse incident that is being asked about at that time. And so this guy, Ryan, wants to give them the media spin that actually hides what's happening inside the jail. I just think it's a bit crazy that we spend this kind of money with this kind of incompetent leadership at the top of policing agencies. I found it very interesting that one of the recommendations, Sheriff Reese says that his officers at Multnomah County Sheriff, there's some officers that are better at others than writing their written reports. And so what he's done is put a lieutenant in charge of overseeing use of force events in their reporting. And so I guess the theory is the officer who, you know, crosses all his T's and dots all his I's is now in charge of making sure that happens with other officers. My thinking is, well, shouldn't every Multnomah County Sheriff's officer be able to fill out a use of force report without actually having technical assistance by a lieutenant? I would think that if the training was sufficient, those officers would have the skill to write their own report. So how about a training on writing reports as compared to putting a lieutenant in charge of reviewing? It seems to be if you have a lieutenant doing an administrative function, that he is being overpaid, he or she is being extremely overpaid in their position. I found it absolutely ironic that training wasn't the number one recommendation that came out of this report. And so it's funny that, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing when you realize that oh, you didn't like the report that came out in 2015? Oh, no worry. We'll just hire a guy who has a history of discriminatory practices to come in and give us another report that actually gives us what we want. And what we want is to hide behind data rather than addressing the use of force and the fact that African Americans are twice as likely to encounter uses of force in Multnomah County Jail. Reese pretends that he's not hiding from it. He says, in fact, his predecessor said it didn't exist, but he wants to drill down to find out if it's possible. But he wants so many data points so that you can justify, based on the person incarcerated, whether or not the use of force was appropriate. I think it's absolutely insane. You want to join the conversation? Give me a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Sean. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. Well, you know, I was sitting here actually. It's a serious issue, but I was starting to kind of laugh.
Yeah, I did too. When I first heard about it, I laughed. I was like, no, they can't be serious about
this.
Well,
and, you know, it's ironic you were just mentioning the amount of money, because that's what I was laughing at, is it's such a ridiculous circus, and the amount of money that is spent on this circus going around and around.
Yes.
And, on these folks, and I like that term, certified smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
How many certified smart guys get paid all this money for being basically worthless and
yes,
not coming up with much of anything? And so you used the term insidious when you first started out your show.
Yes.
And I would say that the term is best used as incestuous.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that was the term I was looking for. Yes, that is exactly the term I was looking for.
They both work.
But yours is better.
A couple of weeks ago, you had on, I think it was Michael White. And he was calling from Arizona. He teaches at U of A.
Yes.
Yeah, and I had called in and specifically had asked about the question of how much is actually looked at, and this is my main point of calling. It's more just a direct statement, and that is that at that time I had brought up the issue about how much is seriously looked at the mental health of the people who become police officers.
Yes.
And I think that is something, because this whole question of the police have a great vernacular about talking about the mental health of the people that they deal with.
Yes.
But I don't think it ever really goes in reverse. And I really seriously think, and I hope that, like you said, they listen to your program so they can catch you in fabrications, let's say.
But, yeah. They're always
so
trying.
So if they're listening, I want them to hear that I think that there needs to be a lot more focus when these guys get hired.
Yes.
That the mental health of the people that they hire has to play a huge role into whether or not they become police officers or not.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things, I tell you, I know too much information about this topic, unfortunately. One of the things that I learned, let's see, I guess Vera Katz was Vera Katz? I can't, there have been way too many mayors.
Yeah, right.
I can't remember. But anyway, there is a guy that is basically the only guy in the Tri-County area who actually does the psychological evaluations for police officers.
Okay.
When I found out that out of the, at least 30,000 psychiatrists in the state of Oregon certified, and there's only one guy, one white guy in Lake Oswego, who pretty much is the only person that actually determines whether or not police officers are mentally fit to become, community members are mentally fit to become police officers. I find that very, very troubling. And in fact, I just reminded myself, his contract should be coming up for renewal soon. And so it should be time to look at that again.
Well, I think, again, that fits into the category of that we take certain people and we so-called give them a title and a certification that they are the only ones who can do these things.
Yes.
When it's true that there's so many more. We're just talking about people who understand the psychology of how people work. And there's plenty of those people out there who could give that certification or work on behalf of that. And, you know, I mean, basically when it comes down to it, there have study after study show that when it comes down to basic mental health of people is that everybody goes by a certain level of mental health, and they get attracted, and it goes throughout their life of
right,
what they're attracted to.
That's right.
And the fact is and that goes from schools they go to institutions they work for, and that the institutions or school they go to actually, based upon their level, attract those people.
Yes.
And it only makes sense. So when you look at the institution of police forces and the problems that are just incestuous within those police forces, it attracts a level of people who, for the most part, and I'm saying there's good people that work in the police forces, but obviously I don't need to tell you, is it attracts folks who love that
power. Yes.
And knowing that they can be above the law and pretty much do what they want to do.
That's right.
And I won't go into the whole history of where they come from, but that's, I think that needs to be looked at a lot more and dealt with, because otherwise we just keep running through these same problems over and over.
You're anyway. Absolutely right. And unfortunately, the people that are in place supposedly to fix it, the more you find out about their background, is
right. That's when, yeah, exactly.
They are the ones that help create the problem that we're now living with.
Yep.
And so expecting them to somehow fix it just seems ludicrous to me.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, in closing, you know, the thing is, James Chassis, that was such the worst sad incident of the kind of thing we're talking about.
Yes, yes.
You know, you mentioned seeing this in the Tribune last Thursday, and I wrote a pretty damning letter to the Tribune when that happened in regards to James Chassis' death, and basically called it a murder.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned,
it was a murder.
It was,
right.
And they were allowed to get away with it. And
yes.
That's the worst aspect that continues to go on.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a
great
day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
How are you?
Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. I would like to hear more about Reese's reasoning for wanting to combine the two, but what his thinking is on that, I have no clue. But
well, he wants to build power, right? Now that he's there, he, you know, now
yeah.
He wants it all.
Yeah, and I agree with your last caller. In addition to psychological evaluations, people need to be vetted, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is their history? What they used to do? You
right.
know, how long have they been a member of the Ku Klux Klan? Those sort of things, you know. But none of that is looked at. And yesterday, I'm going to take this back to the real here. Yesterday was Keaton Otis's birthday. And those of us, family and friends, honored that, and we always will.
Mm-hmm.
And his memory will never be forgotten. And we will get justice for Keaton, who was executed by the Portland Police Department. And those people who take oaths
to protect
uphold
and serve
the Constitution
right.
of
mm-hmm.
the United States,
right.
to uphold the Constitution, to value everyone's rights as a citizen. If they don't do that, they should not be there. And these men who are now trying to figure out ways to cover up these abuses,
right.
they should not be there.
That's right.
If they do not uphold the Constitution, I can remember the Portland Police Department in their little newspaper they have. They call it the, I forget the name of it, but they referenced the newsletter. They referenced...
Oh, the police newsletter, the rap?
Yeah.
The rap sheet?
They referenced... The concerns the community was having about constitutional rights
right.
as constitutional gobbledygook.
Mm. Oh,
now,
of course.
Whoever wrote that should not be there anymore, because they took an oath to uphold the Constitution, not refer to it as gobbledygook.
Right.
So that's where I'm at with that, and God bless Keaton, and he will not be forgotten.
No, he won't, and his next vigil will be on the 12th, which
12th,
is a week
yeah.
from Saturday.
Yesterday was his birthday.
And yesterday was his birthday. Thank you so much.
Hey,
appreciate
it. Take care.
Okay, you too. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Corey. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How about you?
Pretty good. When I worked in law enforcement, sadly, at the age of 23, I was an FTO, a field training officer.
Uh-huh.
The reason I was an FTO is because I had 1 year of college and I was prior military. And so I could read and write reports, and I found myself not being in a position of power, having to read and correct reports for men who have been in the force 10 and 15 years. And so I think we talked about this before. I think there is a an education gap, because at the time you didn't have to have an associate's degree to be a police officer.
Right.
But, you know, and that kind of changed, but a lot of officers were grandfathered in where I worked in Texas. But I did find it somewhat shocking many times reading reports from men who carry weapons who
right.
were, you know, sworn to protect. This was Texas. I'm getting old. It's about 17 years ago. But I found it shocking. Like, you can't write a civil report. And then here I am at 23 having to correct the report and going to my lieutenant. And I think at that time I realized this isn't the right career for me if these men and women can't write a civil report. So
right.
that's, and like I said, I was 23. I shouldn't have been an FTO in the first place. You know, and like I said, I grew out of that career quite easily. You also talked about the commission. And what I realized about being in the city is that hopefully I like Ted Wheeler. I think he'll do a good job. But this system that we have in the city of Portland is a weak mayoral system.
Right.
So Sam Adams, Charlie Hills, their power lies in basically assigning these commissioners. I hope that Ted Wheeler will do something, because if you have, we have a weak mayoral system, but the mayor can't do anything. So I see this happening, and I wish that we had a mayor that could step in. I think Sam Adams tried to do some things, and he was here right when I moved here, and the entire time we've had Charlie Hills, I don't think Charlie Hills did enough.
That's an understatement, you know. Right? Actually, he did a lot. He did a lot, but it was for the police, not for the public.
Exactly. And I don't think he really had the wherewithal nor the power to do anything for the people. And then my final point is, some people keep mentioning vetting. And for me, I was 22 years old, fresh out of the military, you know, and so I qualified to work in corrections. And then I went to the police academy, et cetera, et cetera. But I've worked with guys that I just did not understand. How are you psychologically capable to work in law enforcement knowing that you have a healthy disrespect for, especially when I work in Texas, Latino people, black people, you know, I've seen white cops hate other white people.
Right.
So I think that if they really want to do something, first of all, it's going to have to come from the ground up. So I appreciate all your efforts. And trust me, wherever you're at, I'm going to try to be there to back you up, because you need people that have worked in the system as well to help, and you know what you're doing, but it's going to have to be a sort of grassroots movement if we want change in the city. The change, as much as I hope that it comes from the top, it's not going to come from Ted Wheeler.
No.
Like Chloe. I think she'll do some good things. I know mm-hmm. housing is her major focus, but it's going to have to be a grassroots effort, because if not, what I see happening with the police joining the sheriff's department, I haven't seen that before. And like I said, I'm from Texas,
mm-hmm.
where law enforcement is a big deal.
Right.
For the sheriff, and most of the guys that I've worked with, I worked at a city department. You went to the county department because the county was a bit more lax on the things, sadly, on the things that they did. The city had a bit more power. So to see that the city of Portland might join forces with Multnomah County, that's kind of frightening, because, you know, who's going to play on who? Is the city going to become more lax than they already are?
Right.
I think that's it's a horrible idea, and we have to actually stand up to this, otherwise it's going to be tragic, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree with you, and I agree with you on so many levels. I mean, I like Ted Wheeler. I think Ted Wheeler is going to push as much as Ted Wheeler can push. But if Ted Wheeler doesn't have the public out there demanding change, nothing will happen. And that's really going to be the key. The public has to hold his feet to the fire to make sure that those changes happen. Thank you so much for your call. I so appreciate it. I always appreciate insider knowledge about how this process works. I figure, you know, I've never been a police officer, but I've certainly observed enough of them over the years that it doesn't appear to be a job that requires rocket scientists. Thank you for your call. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Todd. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, Todd. How about you?
It's pretty cold out here.
It is cold, no kidding. It's colder than we've been ever accustomed to here.
Especially in the streets.
Yeah, especially in the streets, yes.
Hey, and that's the point. Is like, it's so cold out here, the police ain't doing nothing to warm anybody up.
Now, supposedly, don't we have all kind of warming shelters that are available for folks on the street, especially as the weather continues to be in the 20s and 30s?
Hey, we're supposed to have a lot of things that we don't, but you know, they just keep feeding us that the trough food, and we keep eating it.
So, what's on your mind? You wanna weigh in on this conversation?
Yeah. I just think if we came together as community members, you know, and as a society, I think we could take it back to where we didn't need you don't need police, to be honest. I mean, if people were more of a community and people knew their neighbors.
Yes. Oh, you know, yes. And actually, the police are the vehicle that actually prevents people from going next door and meeting their neighbors.
We thought call 911 in case of emergency, dog. Like, why not go to your neighbors? Like, your neighbors, yes. Right there. It's going to take the police like 10 minutes, 5 minutes to get there.
Oh, man, that, you know, we need a billboard that says that. Walk out of your house, go next door, and introduce yourself to your next door neighbor. And stop calling the police because they look different.
Right? We gotta get together and get that community service, the people together, the neighbors. You know what I mean? We don't have any of that, and that's what's killing us. And until we fix that, I feel like the police are just gonna run everything, because we're living in fear right now. We're living in fear of our neighbors. Yes. We're living in fear of our community.
Yes.
We're living in fear of our society.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, and they're thriving off of it.
Oh, right. And in a fear-based community, the only people who benefit are the police and the people in power. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Hey, you have a good day.
You do the same.
All right.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Good morning, George. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. I'm
a rare caller, and I'm not real comfortable speaking on the radio, but I just wanted to say that I used to work for Multnomah County as an RN,
mm-hmm.
and over 30 years ago, I did work in the jail system, and that's actually, at the time, it was a place that there was a lot of turnover in the jail, because a lot of nurses would start there so they could get into the county system and then go to some other place in the county, which was not so difficult to work in.
Right.
But for me, you know, the jail, I ended up working there for quite a few years just because I thought it was such a fascinating place, because it was so unworldly and such a place unto itself. And I did work in intake. At the time, it was called reception.
Mm-hmm.
And I did witness a lot of use of force daily, actually, several times a day in that environment. And I really felt that I could not interfere, because the health department was, I kind of felt, was sort of at there at the invitation of the criminal justice system, and that we couldn't really control anything, which of course we couldn't. We didn't have any more access to anything than what the, I shouldn't say access, but we didn't have any more freedom than the prisoners in the jail, you know, that we couldn't, you know, do anything. But you know, I thought that the force utilized against incoming people was mainly used used against people that maybe might be a little bit contrary, and it was sort of like a hammer blow kind of thing to knock people down, to let them know that they weren't in control and that the cops were. And you know, the use of forces throughout the jail system, probably once somebody gets into the jail itself, there might be less than in the reception area.
Right.
Because, you know, they can be controlled, you know, with bars and doors and that sort of stuff. But there was a nurse who specialized in psychiatry there at the time, and he kind of jokingly said that the psychological profile between the cops in the jail and the prisoners was really not that different. Mm.
The only difference was some of them had the keys and some didn't, huh?
Exactly.
Now, I'm really intrigued because I absolutely can understand being a nurse in a prison. You didn't actually have much authority to have any impact on what was happening in the prison. But were you able to talk to your nursing supervisors about what you observed and what happened with those conversations?
I didn't, because I was a new nurse at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of thought that that's the way it was. And some of the other nurses there were a few nurses who had been there, 20, 30 years.
Right.
And they were tough. They were tough nurses. And so I think the goal was to kind of be like them, for the nursing staff. So I think, we were just sort of like, I guess, infected with the same kind of, power and authoritarianism as the cops displayed.
So let me just stop you and thank you for your honesty and just because, working in the jail is like not an environment that most people, would actually be excited about going to every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And B, as a nurse in a helping profession, your goal is to do no harm. And then you are a new kid on the block in an environment that actually doesn't reward individuality.
Right.
And so I just wanted to stop and thank you because unfortunately my experience has been I get a lot of information from former law enforcement when they retire, right?
Uh-huh.
When it's absolutely no chance of them doing anything inside to make it better, right?
Yes.
And why do you think that is? I mean, fear?
Fear of losing their job. It's the pay is really good and, the benefits are great too.
Yeah, especially if you're in Portland Place right now. Yeah, you must be feeling lots of love.
Well, for the
sheriffs,
the ancillary staff as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fascinating to me. The medical staff really were seen as advocates by the prisoners. And, I realized after working there for a while how much this the jail system was just like a pass through for so many people, because I would be out in the community and just walking down the street and people would yell out at me like, "Hey George, how you doing?" And it would be somebody from the jail.
Uh-huh.
And I ran across that all the time, or go into a fast food restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
The person taking my order was
right.
from the jail.
Right.
So and it just was, all the people that go in the jail, they are in our community as well. I certainly learned that lesson.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your call. It has been very enlightening, and I am very appreciative you took the time. And see, it wasn't so bad, was it? Right.
Yeah, no.
Right? Talking on the radio, right? Wasn't that bad.
And, this is the first time I've ever heard anything where people were discussing, an area that I had worked in, the intake part of the jail and the use of force. So, I just had to call and just tell you. And so it was... Thank you very much for doing this.
You are very welcome. Thank you very much for your service and for your honesty. I mean, as a young kid, nobody can blame a young kid for trying to do what their bosses tell them to do.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So, good morning, Harry. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, greetings, Joanne, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
After this election, I don't know if anyone noticed that all our Multnomah County commissioners are women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was wondering, can they make a difference in the policy of Multnomah County Sheriff's Department since they actually run it versus the city does?
Well, here's the weird thing. The only thing that the Board of County Commission has control over as it relates to the sheriff is his budget. I was very disappointed that the public didn't understand why having an appointed sheriff made much more sense than having an elected sheriff. But they'll have 2 years of Mike Reese before he's back on the ballot. And so it's my hope. You know, it's one of the most invisible governments that we have. Ironically, as big as it is, it's pretty invisible. So, yeah.
Okay. Also, I want you this information. I know a couple of years ago I heard that the jail downtown, one of the pods have been empty for over 10 years. They use it for storage. And here's 33 beds they can use for maybe sheltering the homeless.
Well, I am not a fan of putting homeless people in jail so that they can be warm. I mean, I think we must come up with a more humane solution. So I'm not a fan of that.
Okay.
There are jail beds that are empty because at least from the Board of County Commissioner perspective, their goal is to become less reliant on county jail. So they're trying to reduce the number of overall inmates. And, of course, the sheriff's goal is to have every bed full.
Yeah, I see the conflict there.
Yes.
Also, there's also been discussion in the last month or two about Wapato, turning that into maybe a homeless area or...
Again, I mean, I think we should make elected leaders work out of Wapato before we ever consider putting houseless people in a jail, right? I mean, I just think if politicians can't figure out what to do with that monstrosity, then they should be forced to work out of there. I don't think that is ever, short-term or long-term, a solution for people who are houseless. But that's just me personally. Other people think that's a good idea. I think we have to be more humane than that, and we have to find people permanent housing. Like the last mayor, all those temporary shelters, yeah, fine and dandy for a minute, but people need real homes that they can call their own, and we need, that's what we need to do. Not the temporary. The temporary fix would be make the county commissioners work out of there until they figure out what to do with that thing.
Yes. Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Have a great day. Bye now. Okay, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm happy.
Cool.
Definitely. I always look at the glass as being half full.
All right.
You know, a couple of points here. First of all, you know, I've said this before. You know, we live in a society where animals, dogs, have advanced more in terms of civil rights than people. There are more mechanisms in place for animal care, animal shelter, than it is for people. You know, like if there was a wild animal that strayed in the town and you call the police, you know, they're going to call the vets or whatever. They're going to use tranquilizers. Even if this animal is vicious, they're going to put it to sleep and they're going to gently remove it and they ain't going to kill it. But if you call the same police for a person, they're going to show up and kill them. So this is the kind of mentality that we deal with here in America. Now, I know that in the past, I have purported that black people should become racist. Now, the reason I say that black people should become racist is for the same reason that if you get bit by a snake, the only way that they can fight that is with venom. That's the only way they can cure you. Now, the only way we can cure white people from their racist attitude is for them to experience racism. See, white folks don't experience it. It's alien to them. And the more we talk about racism, it doesn't do any good. Only people that experience racism understands it. So I think that until white folks start experiencing racism themselves, that's the only way that they're going to, you know, stop this mess.
Well, let me ask you something, Michael. Have you not seen a new awareness awakening over the last year? of white middle-class America really waking up and actually seeing that racism is alive and well and playing out on the streets of America every single day? Have you not seen that?
I've seen it. I have seen white folks involved, but the bottom line is that it's only a small majority of them.
Well, there's only a small majority of black folks fighting for equality. Most of them are just like trying to trying to survive.
Well, I agree with that. I think what black people's problem is black people, like you said, they're trying to assimilate. They're trying to
survive. You may call it assimilation. I call it survival.
Assimilation, man. They're trying to assimilate. They're trying to be like the slave master. They're trying to be that way. They're not trying to, you know, back in the day when you had the Black Panthers and things like that, they wasn't trying to assimilate. You know, they were trying to redefine and legitimize their own reality. Black people aren't trying to define and legitimize their reality. They're trying to assimilate. That's what's happening today.
You know, I mean, I bet that you and I could find people that would fit that category, but that isn't most of my experience. Most of the people that I know are really just trying to get their kids educated, trying to keep a roof over their head, trying to feed their families, and quite frankly, are just kind of overwhelmed with all the craziness in our society at the moment.
Joanne, I'm gonna give you an example.
Okay, make it quick.
Okay, back in the day when black people wasn't trying to simulate, white folks could not come into the black community and gentrify it. Matter of fact, when white folks used to come into the black community, the first thing they did was lock their car doors. Now, because you had a different kind of black person on the scene, white folks just came into Northeast Portland and now they could just gentrify it. They did that on this group of black people. But back in the day...
So wait, Michael. Let me just like slow you down just a little bit. There's a reason why white people came in and bought up Northeast Portland, inner Northeast Portland, and you can trace it back to public policy decisions made on the Portland City Council. You can trace it back to decisions about providing only police resources in Northeast Portland when it was predominantly black, and now putting in fancy sidewalks and bike lanes to attract white middle class folks to live in Northeast. So you can't blame that on black folks who were working, trying to survive, who couldn't get bank loans, who were redlined, who couldn't open businesses, who the city of Portland put a medium down the middle of the street in Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard to make sure all those black businesses that still were hanging on closed. And once they all closed, they took the medium out. And all of a sudden, white folks started buying up the property. So, Michael, you have to have a history in this community before you can make those statements about what happened and know who's responsible. Because, quite frankly, 25 years ago, the community had the Albina Community Plan, where the community spent hundreds of volunteer hours saying to the city of Portland, this is how we want to see inner Northeast grow. This is how we want to see it develop. And every government entity in the city of Portland was at that table and had responsibility, and every one of them failed the people of Northeast Portland. So,
you know, what you just said, I agree with. That all happened.
It all happened. That's right.
That all happened. The police department over off of MLK, that was the beginning of it.
That's right.
Yeah, that was the beginning of it. But
so, Michael, we can't blame the people with no power for the fundamental changes that have taken place in a community. You have to put the blame where it belongs. And if you weren't at those city council meetings demanding they implement the Albina Community Plan, then you're part of the problem too, because you just assumed that they were going to do it.
No, I was around then because the Albina Ministerial Alliance, they're the ones that was doing all of that back
no,
in the day.
No. It was not the Albina Ministerial Alliance. It was a community coalition that created the Albina Community Plan. Lots of community-based organizations. I got to go, Michael, because you're taking me way off topic. Have a great day.
All right.
Happy New Year. See ya. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm okay. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Oh, thank you. I just want to comment on an earlier aspect of your conversation with that young man. Do you remember when Katrina hit?
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep.
Okay, okay. So the big news of that day, if you've ever been to Los Angeles, the biggest story of that day was a dog that was trapped on a tributary block in the middle of the L.A. River, and they called 6 fire units for one dog. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Dee Dee. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Hi.
I really want to thank you for your focus on police accountability and the importance of not having the sheriffs and the police combined.
Right.
And the importance of having more transparency and accountability with the sheriffs, and to never use jail for people already oppressed with limited resources and oppressing them. And it just sounds just too much like what we did to Native Americans in genocide and what we're done in World War II by Nazis to different groups.
That's right.
And I also want to thank you for your responses to Michael, because I was ready to say everything you said. Plus, I was ready to say that a lot of the violence and the oppression that we're seeing is fear-based.
Yes.
If not all of it.
Right.
And fear, thinking that one was victimized, fear that one's going to be victimized, and the only way to prevent that is to control the people, and the way to control them is to hurt them, deny their rights, and to scare them. That is what an occupying army does. That's what fascism is. It's what domestic violence is. What Trump does. And that's what we need to counter. My father had been totally raised to not be racist, but didn't understand how the military system tries to break you to their will through basic training. And they just had a black guy boxing these white, spoiled rich guys around. And that one experience of racism and systemic oppression did not make him more empathic and make connections. It just made him more revengeful, hostile, and create more alienation and excuse for it. And he is a very sincere man who will never allow the N-word, who thinks that redlining is vicious. I mean, he's consciously trying to not be racist. So experiencing racism, classism, whatever it is, does not necessarily counter. It's a discussion with empathy, respect, and compassion that helps us empathize with ourselves, and if we're connected to ourselves, we connect with others. Now, Maywood Park decided to, a little neighborhood where I-205 was going to go through, solved a lot of the police problems. When I-205 was going to come through, they were unincorporated. They decided to become their own city. It's just a few blocks, just a little suburb. And with that, they decide whether they're going to have policing. If so, how and who make contact with the folks and hold them accountable. The police are very well behaved. Now, it's not a predominantly black area, the resources that whites are trying to take over, but it shows that already in the city of Portland, we have a precedent in which we have local policing and control of police that we can extend other ways. And we've got a legal precedent that we can continue that, and we have a social psychological precedent that can empower us to do that.
Yes. Well, thank
you. And community policing does work. Occupied military force might make some more money from folks by having us retaliate, then they have an excuse, and then they have infiltrators as police pretending to be protesters, and then they have an excuse to get more money. But we can counter that. And that is part of what KBOO has done, which FEMA has said in a 30-year study, that KBOO versus any other institution, organization, anywhere in the United States of America, has done more to make local community democracy, resilience, and preparedness.
I love that.
Thank you for your part. Continue it.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you calling today, and your timing is perfect because you get to have the last word today. Appreciate you calling in. Have a great day. By the way, I need to correct myself. The Keaton Otis Vigil is the 12th of every month, and the 12th is actually a week from today. So it would be next Thursday at 6 p.m. at the corner of Northeast 6th and Halsey. It is the corner that Keaton Otis lost his life at the hands of Portland police, and we are there every month, come rain, come shine, come snow, to pay tribute to him and his dad, Fred Bryant, who died seeking justice for his son. And I am Joanne Hardesty. It's been a pleasure to be here with you this week. Want to thank my engineer, John, who's absolutely fabulous. And we'll see you next week. Same place, same station, same time. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, KBOO. It's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Press Watch, your weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program, hosted by Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogering welcomes back Dr. Zahir Wahab to discuss his work in his home country of Afghanistan. And at 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11, Between the Covers presents Solmaz Sharif's astonishing first book, Look. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk brings you Pulitzer Prize-winning author Isabel Wilkerson, fresh off of an appearance on Meet the Press, to talk about her book, The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. A great lineup this morning on KBOO, and thank you for becoming a member. And if you're not a member, I'll thank you if you go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 8:59.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the opening reception for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy, reframed and exhibited Tuesday, January 13th at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's George R. White Library in Portland. The reception is an opportunity to tour the exhibit, which illustrates the Black philanthropic experience, hear from exhibit creators, and connect with social justice movement leaders from across Portland. Again, that's the opening reception for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy, reframed and exhibited Tuesday, January 13th at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's George R. White Library, 2811 Northeast Holman Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly